Today on the Inland Journal podcast, we'll look at the growing need for foster parents in Washington and what the state is doing to recruit new people to the system. Stacy Connor and her husband have five children, a mix of biological and adopted. With that large brood, why take on more as foster parents?
The simple answer is we see our lives as very privileged and very we have a lot, and we know that when we look at the bigger world, and we wanted to share that. The more personal reason is that as we were creating our family, we hope to have one more biological child, and we lost a baby very late in pregnancy, and I was heartbroken. And I said, you know what, I'm going to do it. I got licensed for foster care. I'm going to hold babies until I do not want to hold babies anymore. And then I'm going to move on with my life and move on to the next chapter. And I'm still holding babies 6 years later.
And 6 years in, Connor is showing the way for other foster families.
In Washington State, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families has realized that foster parents need a support system when they're caring for vulnerable kids. And what they do is they hire experienced foster parents to come in and be mentors to brand new foster parents. And that peer mentor will stick with a foster parent throughout the time that they're licensed to take in children. So I'm one of those peer mentors. I've been a foster parent for 6 years in Spokane County, and I now have a huge list of people, families, licensed foster families that I mentor.
State officials say Washington has a greater need than ever for foster families. According to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, the state has about 9,200 children placed in private and group homes and about 5,100 providers. Recently, Secretary Ross Hunter published his agency's plan for what he calls improving the foster parent experience. It's a strategy for not only recruiting new parents, but also for retaining people like Stacy Connor. Hunter calls for better communication between foster parents and the caseworkers of the children in their homes to reduce the frustration parents sometimes feel. He hopes to simplify and speed the process of applying to become a foster parent by going from paper to online. By improving that foster parent experience, the hope is it will make Joni Starton's job easier. Starton finds places for children who need temporary homes.
We typically will read a case about the kids. We try and get as much information about the kids. And then we have a database that we call the Foster Parent Keeper that has all of our foster homes listed in it. It has all their information that we kind of feel like we need in order to place kids in their home, what they're licensed for, who they currently have, kind of their specifications about their home, if they have animals, how many bio kids, where the kids will sleep, all kinds of just different things, if they need daycare or not. So we start searching through our keeper, looking for who has available beds and are they able to take the kids that we're looking for. And then we make a phone call.
Sometimes that phone call leads to a placement. Sometimes it doesn't.
We have a hard time placing our teenage kids. They're harder. Those kind of homes that are willing to take those harder kids are really needed. And even our, 2 and 3 year olds are hard sometimes. So skilled foster families are really needed. We just welcomed a new home on the 3rd, and I think they're taking placement of 2 littles tomorrow. So they open up their home and we fill them up pretty quickly. And, you know, there's some homes that are pretty specific in what kind of kids they have. So I know we look through the keeper and it seems like we have a lot of open placements, but then it just depends on the kiddo that we're looking for and where they fit.
Jody Starton works in a unit called Home Finders. It's supervised by Eric Larson. Larson says one of the changes the agency is considering is in the way it compensates foster parents.
Foster homes don't get paid, they get reimbursed. So there is no income made here. But they do get a reimbursement from the state, and that just depends on the age of the child and if there are any behaviors or excessive needs that go along with the child that they can get reimbursed for their time. So that money is used to help get clothes, school clothes, and supplies for the child, maybe sign them up for sports or whatever is needed. So it's a reimbursement.
Are there limitations to those reimbursements? For example, you probably couldn't go crazy and, you know, lavishing a child with a whole bunch of stuff.
Correct. So Every child that comes into care has what's called a rate assessment done on them. And our rate assessor meets with the foster family and they kind of talk about the child. And there's certain domains that we're looking at about the child that gets put into the rate assessment study. And that determines how much the foster parent will get reimbursed. So it's a set rate. And then every 6 months we're looking at, is that rate still applicable, or does it need to be raised, or does it need to be lowered?
Is this system pretty much the same as it's been for, let's say, a generation or two, or is this a system that sort of evolves with the changing times, so to speak?
I would say, unfortunately, it's the same. Right now is kind of an exciting time for our department. We've recently become a brand new agency. So we're now called the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, previously known as the Department of Social and Health Services. We've kind of been cut out of DSHS and have made our own Department of Children, Youth, and Families. So our new secretary, Ross Hunter, is dedicated and wanting to see the growth within our foster care system and to see changes. So for example, one of the things we're looking at right now is our rate study to determine is the reimbursement amount that we're getting, foster parents are getting, is that adequate or does that need to be raised? And that hasn't been looked at in years.
The process of becoming a foster parent is rigorous, says Melissa Fielding. Fielding is a regional licensing supervisor for the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. She says applicants, whether married or unmarried couples or single people, are asked to provide a hefty amount of information.
The paperwork is designed to A, sort of apprise you of what's required, and B, it allows us to get to know you. So that's sort of those are the two goals there. You would submit that to the state and or your child placing agency if you wanted to go through a private agency and then get assigned a licensor.
There are home inspections and home studies. Applicants are required to take at least 24 hours of basic training.
You get trained sort of on all the ins and outs of working with children who come from trauma, working with kids in the foster care system, as well as just, you know, basically a little bit on the dependency process, you know, what it means to be a dependent of the state of Washington, how you work with families, and then really a lot on how we prefer that you interact with our kids. So we have, you know, obviously some requirements about the discipline that's involved, things you can and can't do with our foster kids. So 24 hours is not going to train you to be an expert foster parent, but it's designed to sort of give you some basics.
And then if all goes well, 3 or 4 months after you start the process, you get a license to be a foster parent, and you can begin accepting children into your home. Sometimes along the way, Fielding says prospective parents find this wasn't a good idea for them after all.
I think the best foster parents are people that have, well, truly that just like kids in general, like different varieties of children. And by different varieties, I mean age ranges and behaviors. And, you know, they can take a kid who's kind of quirky and they can take a child who, you know, isn't going to be homework inclined versus wanting to take a child who's going to mold into their family. That's more problematic. If you're looking for a cookie cutter of your own children, that doesn't usually lend itself well to the foster care system.
We circle back to Stacy Connor. She says being a foster parent has given her experiences she'd never have otherwise had and friends she treasures.
And then on a deeper level, when we look around the world and we see things we don't like, or we see things we want to change, or we see homelessness or drug use, the best way to get involved and help with that is to get involved locally. And there's nothing more meaningful you can do than take in a child whose family, biological family, is struggling with those kind of issues and show them how a more stable family operates. And then ultimately, you know, the goal in Washington State is always reunification, and that involves being able to be a support system often for a family that's getting back on their feet or that's recovering from addiction. And it's pretty cool. We've gotten to the point where our environments are very self-sufficient, and it's really hard to let people in. And it's particularly hard to let messy things in because it's stressful and we can't control it, and it makes us sad, and we have to grieve when it doesn't go the way we were hoping or when a child has to go home. I get how traumatic that is to let into your home the idea of loving a child and letting them go, the idea of a child that might have behaviors that you've never seen before. It's one of the reasons I'm here. It's one of the reasons I love this job. And people call me at 10 o'clock at night because they're dealing with something that they're not sure how to handle. And we talk and we get through it and we process it. That's the mentor role that I'm in as a foster peer mentor. And it brings us closer and hopefully helps them get through the situation. So that's the solution to that. But the problem is that letting something that messy into your life is hard. And I think people just... They don't want to do it because it's scary. I think the other thing that is hard, and I will talk about this in a slightly different way than the amazing people here at the state agency have, is that there are a lot of rules and regulations. There are a lot of standards to be met, and it's scary when the state says that it's been alleged that you're doing something wrong. And, you know, we like to talk about sensational cases like a foster parent who's hurting a child, but that is the rare, rare case. What is far more common is that a foster parent is alleged to be doing something, usually not something hurtful to the child, usually something that violates a rule in terms of how we care for children in our homes, and then that has to be investigated. It has to be investigated. All allegations against foster parents are investigated. 95% are unfounded, so... that's a huge number, but that's a scary process. And I think people hear that and they hear about it and it's terrifying to them. I know, for instance, my husband has a professional license and we've been investigated twice for breaking rules. Both times it was unfounded, but I can tell you I shed a lot of tears and it was very stressful. And I think that's super hard for people to accept that risk in their homes and in their families.
Stacy Connor is a peer mentor to foster families in Washington. If you're interested in becoming a foster parent in this state, you can go to the website of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families to learn more about it. You've been listening to Spokane Public Radio's public affairs radio program and podcast, Inland Journal. You can subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcasts, NPR One, or Google Play, or hear it at the Spokane Public Radio website. Your comments and story ideas are always welcome at inlandjournal@kpbx.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Doug Nadvornik.